Good morning, everyone. The Senate Education Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Monday, March 29, 2021. The time is 9:05. We're meeting in the State Capitol Room 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Hughes, Senator Machicki, Senator Begich, and myself, Chair Senator Holland. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Jeannie, our recording secretary, and Kelsey, our moderator for today. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. Today we will continue discussing SB 111 regarding K-3 reading improvement. With that, Mr. King, will you continue walking us through the sectional analysis? We finished up section 9 on Friday, I believe it was, and we're ready to pick up on section 10. And once again, this is the only thing on the item on the calendar today for this committee. And we do plan on finishing the sectional analysis today, but feel free to ask questions as they come up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Ed King, staff to Senator Holland.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, we were just getting ready to talk about Section 10, which is page 2 of the sectional analysis, and it begins on page 5 of the bill. Section 10 is related to the early education programs. The approval of those programs and grant funding for the development of those programs. The new section, just as a note for the public, the under 1403 Chapter 3, there are entire new sections 410 and 420. So although this is all new language, it's not bold and underlined. So everything on the bottom of page 5, everything on 6 and 7 is all new language. Section 410 is related to the early education programs and the grant funding. Subsection A of that section is directing the department to provide training and assistance for districts to develop district-wide education programs that comply with the standards that we'll talk about a little bit later, Mr. Chairman. I would note also that this paragraph 1 triggers a fiscal impact. The department is requesting 3 positions in order to implement that paragraph. Paragraph 2 of the subsection A is the approval of programs from district programs so that they can be included in the foundation formula, which we'll talk about a little bit later. So paragraph A2 will appear throughout the rest of the bill. Subsection B is related to grants for specific districts. It's a 3-year grant program so that districts can develop pre-K education or early education programs that will qualify for approval under A2. And then again, once that approval applies, then those students would be included in the foundation formula at 1/2 an ADM, which we'll address shortly. Subsection C is also related to those grant programs. This is just the eligibility of a district to apply for the grant. It directs the department to rank the different all of the 54 districts and identify the lowest performing 22 districts, which will be eligible for a grant to develop a pre-K program. The language allows under paragraphs 1, 2, and 3 is kind of a phase-in approach, limiting the number of districts that can apply for the grants. So it's not until fiscal year 24 at the beginning of, or at July 1, 2023, that all 20 of the lowest performing districts can apply. Mr. Chairman, this language is slightly adjusted from previous iterations of this bill, and it's still a little bit clunky, so I would encourage the members to consider some alternative language, which we can discuss at a later date. Subsection D is language related to limitation of funding for ADM inclusion under A2 of this section. So this allows the department to make sure that programs are up to the quality standards that we'll talk about under 1407-165A5. Those are regulations adopted by the Board of Education on the quality of pre-education programs, or early education programs, rather. And it limits the amount of funding for the inclusion of districts' students into the ADM to $3 million per year. So this is purely a way to provide a glide path rather than potentially having nearly $18 million hit the budget all in 1 year. This spreads that financial impact over several years. Subsection E on under 410 is in the event that after a district receives a grant and completes the three-year program, that the program is still not ready for inclusion and acceptance by the department. This gives discretion to the commissioner to allow the grant to continue so that the district can continue to develop the program so that it is up to those quality standards. Subsection F is some required language just to make sure that it's very clear that the ADM inclusion is only permitted if the department approves the program under A2 of this section. And section subsection G makes it clear that the grants under this section are subject to appropriation, and subsection H are just definitions used within the subsection.
Thank you.
Question
from Senator Hughes.
Well, in E, subsection E, regarding the remediation grants, it looks like they can get that for 2 years, for a total of 5 years. I'm just wondering if we are almost subtly saying you can go 4 years without really worrying about meeting the department standards. I'm just, that makes me a little uncomfortable. I can understand the first year trying to get up to speed, but by the second year you'd want them to start having a good strong program. So I'm kind of concerned that we're allowing 5 years. How can we, and maybe Senator Beckage might want to speak to this too, how can we make sure that a district would get their ducks in a row faster than waiting till year five?
I can answer first, Mr. Chairman, if you prefer.
If you have an answer first. I think I know where you're going with it, but go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would point out that once the program is approved by the department, the funding becomes stable and secure. And as long as it's in the grant process, it's subject to appropriation and insecure. So these remediation grants are a lot less stable of funding than getting the program up to quality and including it in the ADM. So the incentive to get to that high quality development is built into the bill.
Okay.
Senator Beckage, did you have anything?
Oh, wait, I'm going to have my questions after.
Okay.
After, are you done with the section?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm done with the section.
So,
Senator Beckage.
I have serious questions. Just in addressing that last point, I actually have faith in our school districts, and so I believe part of the reason that you provide the remediation is that the department can take a look to see if they've reached the point of success, and if they have, then they'll be rolled into the ADM. But I don't have faith that people will even go necessarily into this grants program as this bill is written, because the implication, and this is where Senator Hughes may be correct, the implication is that the moving into the formula or moving into the ADM is also unstable because you end up repealing the inclusion in the ADM. So a district might make the risk under this section when it's repealed of having rolled into the ADM, into the formula, and then suddenly they're stuck with a pre-K program that they can no longer afford because they're no longer in the formula because this bill repeals it. But that's not where I want to start. So my first question is, you have on line 4, page 6, the district that has not received a grant under this section. Now, since most of this language is taken nearly word for word from SBA, that was added, and I'm curious why it was added. So if you could just describe that for the committee, I'd appreciate that.
Senator Beckage, thank you. Senator Beckage, through the chair. Yes, the language in SB8 was effectively dividing the districts into six groups and then specifying which year that they could apply in. And then it had some additional language that said that if you were eligible in a previous year but didn't apply or weren't approved, that you could continue to apply in a future year. This is just a different way to get to that same outcome, so that the pool, in this case, the pool is 20 districts, and then once you've received a grant, you remove yourself from the eligibility pool. So once all of the 20 districts have received a grant, the pool would be empty and the grants would cease.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman?
Senator Beckage?
So that's the second thing I've noted, is you reduced the pool. Now, in our informal discussions, I had suggested removing the last two of the 6 year under the SB8, since that was the model we were working from, and I know you're aware of that, so that would have removed 40% of the districts. This limits it to 20 of 50, 53, 52, however you want to do the count, but districts. And so What was your logic in just choosing those 20 districts and excluding the other 30-some districts?
Senator Begich, through the chair, in Senate Bill 8, as you referenced, the cohorts were, the first three cohorts got you to 40%, which is not a round number when you apply it to 53 or 54 or 52 districts. Mm-hmm. And so it left a little bit of ambiguity on which districts would be eligible or not. And so it seemed to me, at least, that it made more sense to use a whole number rather than a percentage. And the 20 number is roughly what you get when you use those first three cohorts. So although, Mr. Chairman, it's the committee's prerogative to change that number if it likes.
Well, and that just brings me to my point. I mean, Mr. Chairman, either we believe that early education works because of 10 years' worth of evidence that we've had here presented to us over and over, year after year, in grants programs that show the efficacy of high-quality pre-K versus other forms of pre-K and early education, or we don't. And if we don't believe in it, and if we don't have faith in it, or if we, you know, believe that it has to have a termination date because it's considered experimental, why don't we apply that standard throughout this bill for experimental things? We don't. We choose to actually pick specific things. And so why 20 districts? Why those 20 lowest performing districts? What analysis was done to determine that?
Senator Begich, in the last committee meeting, I even offered to you, I said, we would be happy to include more. I do believe that efficacy tests are an important part. Uh-huh. I believe you and I will agree that pre-K programs, there's a vast range of quality in them, and just because it's all in the execution of the program. And I do believe the efficacy test is going to be important. And I'd be glad to include an additional efficacy test wherever you care to.
Well,
but I thought you had mentioned that you were not interested in that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my words, if I may respond to that, were that I'm not interested in termination dates on major policy issues like this. Now, we use sunset clauses and termination clauses, Mr. Chairman, for things like the Suicide Prevention Council, which both the President and I sit on. Every 7 years, we do an audit of that program, we analyze it, and we determine whether or not that board or that commission is meeting its fiscal conditions. When we set policy, say, for things like whether or not we're going to have a K in the K-12 program, which was a policy we set here, we didn't set a termination date on it. We said we're going to make a commitment to the policy. And the problem with the way the bill's written is that it rolls into the ADM and the formula the promise of this, and then doesn't fulfill the promise in the long run. So it makes very little sense to have a sunset clause for this type of policy. Now, if you were talking about, and we will as we go on, quality versus low-quality pre-K, and that's in a later section, so I'll address it at that time. There are your bill has very strong provisions of what is quality pre-K. We actually lay it out here because that's what the evidence in our state shows. So I'm drilling down and asking the question, why are we limiting it to just 20 of the lowest performing districts if we know it works? Why just 20? That's all I'm asking. That's the question.
Mr. King, do you have any response to that?
Mr. Chairman, the concept here is that a district can include its pre-K or early education programs into the ADM if it is of high quality. And so the districts that already have pre-K programs, early education programs, might not go through this grant process, or some districts might not go through this grant process at all because they don't have sufficient need in their area to justify a program. The idea was that some number less than every district is going to need to apply, whether that number is 20 or 25 or whatever that number might be, is absolutely a policy call.
Thank you, Mr. King.
Thank you. That's a good answer. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
In Section D, of course, they can't all roll into the ADM because I agreed, and our discussions brought us to that place, Mr. Chairman, to limit to $3 million, you know, as opposed to the limit that was in SB8, which was $5 million, I think, given consideration. But I just want to point out that, and I'm agreeing with this section, I think that subsection is a good one, but it does limit the number that could roll in. So there is a, if you will, a bottleneck that's created in the promise from the bill. My last question is, you didn't mention the Parents as Teachers program. It's here, it's line 19 in this section through line 13 on the next page, line 19 on page 7 over to line 13 on page 8. And it's repealed in Section 38 of the bill. It's here and codified, but then it's repealed in Section 38 of the bill. I'm just curious as to why you're repealing parents as teachers in Section 38.
Mr. King.
Thank you, Senator Begich, through the chair, and I apologize. I said that I was done with that section, meaning Section 410 and not Section 10 of the sectional analysis. There is the Parents as Teachers program codified under Section 420, which is all new language. This program doesn't exist under current law. It's currently funded through a collaboration with Department of Health and Social Services and is in the current budget. But this simply codifies this program within the Department of Education and Early Development and funds it accordingly. The repealer provisions, again, throughout the bill, Mr. Chairman, are purely a way to change the default so that a program needs to make sure that it works for Alaska before the funding continues. And there's necessarily no intent for those repealers to take effect if the programs are working and the legislature, the future legislature, reviews the programs. Every section in this bill requires an annual report. The intent is that the legislature would review those annual reports and decide whether or not those repealer provisions that take effect under the 37th legislature should in fact take effect. Although there is a repealer provision in the Parents as Teachers program, Mr. Chairman, it's not necessarily the intent of this legislature for those to be repealed, just merely that the default should be that the funding for those programs should not continue unless they are proven to work in a unique state as such as Alaska. There was another question, Mr. Chairman, but I'll address it after when it's appropriate.
Once we've covered that section. Senator Hughes.
Yes, I'm just wondering, and I don't know if you know of this, Ed, or if we have led legal online, when we sunset boards and commissions and such with the idea, Senator Begich, there's a review process, an audit that we go through, and then we determine to re-up it or not. Do they use just a simple repeal like this bill, or could we have something in the bill instead of just a simple repeal that the intention is that there's a sunset date with the intention that the legislature review and that there be a thorough analysis? I'm just wondering if we're doing it the typical sunset way or we're doing it a different way here.
Did you want to speak of the report we were discussing about including a report generated? Address that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Hughes through the chair. Yes, there are multiple ways that the legislative legal could draft a sunset provision. In a portion of law in which it is just a simple repeal with no connecting and required conforming language, a date in the actual language might be appropriate. The problem with that is that then once that happens, you have this language that's in the bill or that's in law that has no effect and it continues, it's just dead language in the law. So the repealer provision is a cleaner way to do it. In the case of this bill, because there are so many sections of law that connect to one another, that there are needs for conforming language after the repeal happens. So it's not just a simple repeal, it also has to do a reverting provisions within the bill to bring things back to the way that they were if that were to take effect. Mr. Chairman, in regards to the annual report or to the report in general, the very end of this bill, there's transition language that requires that the department provide to the legislature a report before the termination of the reading intervention specialists that we're going to come to later. And that is intentional language so that the legislature gets a report from the department on the efficacy of that program before it is repealed, with time to act before that repeal happens. If it's the committee's will, we can expand that language to include all of the other programs as well. But within the bill, there are reporting requirements for everything. That we did neglect to include the Parents as Teachers report, annual report. We talked about that last on Monday. That should be included if it's the committee's intention. However, the virtual consortium, the other portions of this bill that are subject to repeal do require annual reports to the legislature so that the legislature can review the progress of these and the efficacy of these programs and decide whether they should continue.
Thank you. Senator Bashiki.
Yeah, just for a brief add-on, Mr. King, isn't it also true that if the legislature chooses before the 37th legislature that this program is functioning and delivering as intended, that they can certainly change those termination dates at any time they choose?
Senator Michiki, through the chair, that is absolutely correct. And the opposite would also be true. If the legislature decided that this program was not working, it could terminate these programs before that date as well.
Thank you.
Seeing no more questions, if you would continue with the, I guess we're in the second portion of Section 10.
Mr. Chairman, before we, I believe that we completed Section 10, but before we move on, I believe there was a question that I had not addressed yet related to Subsection D.
Please address it.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and this was related to the cap on funding, to limit funding to $3 million. And I just wanted to make sure you're on the record that it's very clear that this is a incremental funding, so that the roughly $18 million that the program might cost, it simply doesn't get included in 1 year. It's spread over 6 years. And so the funding, although it is limited, it's more of a transition period to full funding for all of the departments rather than including everybody at the same time. And there's also a timing issue, Mr. Chairman, in relation to whether the districts are prepared to enter or request approval for their program immediately, or whether they need to do more work on their program to meet the quality requirements for inclusion. And so a district that has no program at all might need the grant in 3 years or 4 years or 5 years to develop that program before it's included in the ADM, whereas a larger district that already has a pre-K program might be able to apply immediately. And so this allows for that timing. Those larger districts would include their programs in the ADM much sooner than a smaller district that's just getting started. And that provides that transition.
Thank you, Mr. King. Please continue.
Mr. Chairman, moving on to Section 11 of the bill, which occurs on, it begins on page 8. It's on page 2-3 of the sectional analysis. Section 11 is current language that is the requirements of the department, and it makes a change to paragraph 8, which is general supervision over pre-elementary schools that receive direct state and federal funding. That's existing language. The change would change consistently throughout the bill the word pre-elementary to early education, and then ensures that the programs that are approved under 410A2, which was the section we just talked about, are also captured under this paragraph. There's also a new paragraph added under on page 10 on line 27 through 29. Paragraph 18 also directs the department to establish a reading program that is added in a later section of this bill.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, section 12 of the bill starts on page 10, line 30. But the first change to the bill, actually the only change of the bill, it's a little bit hard to find. It's on page 13, line 13, and it's just simply changing or removing the reference to 1437-70, which is later repealed if that repealer is to take effect. So this is just a conforming amendment to that section of law.
To clarify, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Begich.
And 14.30.770 is the targeted reading program, right?
Mr. Chairman, the 770 is the reading intervention specialists that we'll be talking about in Section 33. Section 13 of the bill is the reading, not the reading intervention. It's the, let me check my notes. Section 12 is
1430-770.
770 is the reading specialists in that are added by Section 33 of the bill and repealed in Section 39 of the bill. Section 13, and that repeal date is on, the reason why there's Section 12 and Section 13 is because they have different repeal dates. Section 12 is referencing the repeal date of June 30th, 2028, whereas Section 13 is conforming to the repeal date of 6/30/2032. So, Mr. Chairman, if those dates were aligned to be the same date, this bill would be 3 pages shorter.
Mr. Chairman, did you just do Section 13?
I believe I did.
May I ask about Section 13?
Please, Senator Begich.
That was funny. I just want to really, just on that one, I want to drill down to page 14, line 14, and approve early education programs provided by a school district under 1403-410-A2. This is, of course, you delete 1410, and so the idea here that I just want to caution you about and you know, you think about it or work with it, is that taking away the department's ability to approve early education programs provided under that district, if indeed an earlier legislator, President McChickie indicated, could make a decision or change a decision about some of the repeal dates, you have to be sure that that one also tends to conform. Otherwise, it's going to take away the approval process, and the approval process is connected to the higher quality pre-kindergarten that's identified in the bill later, right?
Senator Begich, through the chair, yes. 410 is the specifically in this section, it's a reference to 410A2, which is the approval of programs for the inclusion in the foundation formula. So when this, if this repeal of 410 were to take effect, then that reference to 410A2 would not have a statute to be referencing. And therefore, it's a conforming amendment to if that repeal were to take effect. I would point out that supervision of programs does not go away, and we addressed that in an earlier section of the
Section 2, I think, or
I believe
one or
that's,
two. Yeah.
Yes, Senator Begich, through the chair, I believe that that's correct. Section 2 makes it clear that it's just the approval of those programs for the inclusion of ADM that goes away and not the supervision of those programs that exist under current law.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. King, and this is up to the chair, of course. You work for him, but is it would it be possible to create a chart of repealer language throughout the bill so that we would understand what that looks like, what it affects, and what we should keep our eye on as this program? If this bill passes and this program is actually executed, it would be nice to have a clear understanding of what we should be looking at going forward.
That's a great idea.
Yeah,
Senator Machicki.
Senator Machicki, through the chair, yes, I'd be happy to provide some sort of a graphic or something that would be helpful in that regard. I would also point out that I did include the repeal dates on each section within the sectional analysis, if that's helpful. But I can try to do something more visual for you if that's helpful as well.
Thank you.
With no other questions, Section 14.
Mr. Chairman, Section 14 is, again, just conforming to the change of the language that is, exists in current law is pre-kindergarten, right?
Pre-elementary.
And throughout the bill, we're changing that language to be early education. And so this is just conforming language to that change throughout.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, those kinds of changes were in all these bills. It was just a way for the department to update its language, essentially.
Thank you, Senator Begich.
And Mr. Chairman, I would point out that early education is a defined term later in the bill. Section 15, Mr. Chairman, is related to the section of textbook. This is just adding language that allows the department to offer textbooks or other supplementary reading materials to districts. And this is conforming to language that exists in 770 and 765 of Chapter 30 that we are going to get to shortly. This is not a requirement for the department to provide anything. It's just an allowance authorization to do that in addition to the current language that's in existing law. And Section 16 is a reversal of this language, at least in regard to the 1430-770, which is repealed in 2028. So Section 16 is just a reverting paragraph, subsection, if that repeal were to take effect. Mr. Chairman, Section 17 of the bill, which starts on page 16, line 25, is related to the regulations of the department. And again, this is one of the more important sections of the bill. It is establishing the quality standards for an early education program. Paragraph A5 is all new language, which happens on page 17, lines 3 through 26. And this establishes the requirements for a quality pre-education program or early education program in order to qualify for approval under A2 of the section that we talked about, the language that we talked about in Section 10 of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, on second.
Senator Begich.
On Section 17, there is actually no reference back to the section that is repealed, but this is also repealed. So the question I have here is, wouldn't it make more sense for the department to adopt regulations as to what is a quality pre-K program, which this represents? This is the consensus of the science in this matter, and leave it on the books? Why repeal it if indeed these are what we consider to be high-quality early education programming? Because that doesn't need to be tied to a repealer. So why would you repeal that?
Mr. King?
Senator Begich, through the chair, the only reason why this language, it's not that the language becomes irrelevant or moot. It does become moot, actually. Because the department is no longer approving programs, the quality standards wouldn't reflect any action by the department. And so the regulations would be in existence, which is fine, but they wouldn't have a statute to reference.
Mr. Chairman, if I could follow up on that.
Senator Baggett.
Here we are then 10 years later, or perhaps 15 years later, and these standards are repealed. The message that that very easily sends to a public sometime in the distant future is that these standards no longer matter, or the standards aren't required or important. If there was something that was critical to why the governor and the commissioner and myself came together in the first place, it was because he believed there were no standards. At the very least, our department sets those standards. We have, whether it's these Alaska standards for cultural education or the history standards that I helped draft, social studies standards back in the 90s, we have them. We don't require them to be applied, but we have them to set a target for school districts so that they're at least attempting to achieve to the highest level of standard for the programming that we do. We're going to set a civics education standard in this committee, Mr. Chairman. We passed it out. We generally supported that. We'll have the department set a standard. Districts aren't going to actually necessarily take that standard and run with it, but we hope that they will. We're counting on them to do it. So what I would argue is, at the very least, this should not be part of your repealer. There's no actual reason for it to be repealed if it actually sets a higher bar for our districts in terms of making sure that their programs do what they say that they'll do. That's a matter of transparency for the public. The public should know that the early education programs could be held to a higher standard, and they should have access to those standards through our Department of Education. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Baggett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And on that point, just in response, there would be nothing wrong with leaving these standards in effect. The districts would then, for their own local districts, have to adhere to these standards, not for inclusion in ADM, but just as a matter of policy.
And for that matter, science, reading, intervention programs could be incorporated by every district in the state, and it would be great if we didn't have to do it through legislation. Exactly. But we just see this.
Excuse me.
Senator Hughes.
I just want to say leaving it in is something I would like to consider, because if they're going to offer programs, regardless of what we do here, they should be a high standard. So I would certainly entertain that concept.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Senator Machicki.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I have to agree, and I'll tell you why. Even in local districts that have pre-K now, early education, some people like to believe that it's sort of glorified babysitting, and I think a standard would be important for folks, even if this were sunsetted, for them to go out for their own independent or local funding option. Without that, I think any future programs are at risk, so I think it's something worth considering.
And we do have a committee substitute, thoughts for a committee substitute under consideration. We can certainly consider that.
Can I add one more thing?
Pardon?
Can I add something as well, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Baggett.
You just triggered this thought, Senator Machicki. One of the things that is really useful is for the department to have standards for the pre-K programs it supports as well. So right now, they established those standards. They're not as strict as they could be. They're relatively loose. There are some that are higher quality than others, but this would actually send a message to the department to ensure that they're standardizing their approach to what they fund with our stewardship of their funds. So I think that has some relevance. And just thinking about, I've read a number of studies over the last 2 weeks on everything from early education efficacy to, you know, relationship between early education and retention and to graduation. And the one theme that is consistent in every one of those reports is inconsistency in early education programs is at the root of success or failure of those programs and their ability to work with a good, strong reading program. So I would just offer that last bit of evidence to the discussion.
Thank you, Senator Baggett. Mr. King, I believe we're on section 18.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. And just before I move to section 18, if I could just clarify the record that there's not a committee substitute bill already drafted. There's several amendments being considered that could be included in a committee substitute.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Section 18 relates to reports to the legislature. These are reports by the Board of Education. And this section, Section 18, adds a paragraph 4, which is the implementation of the virtual consortium, which is added later at the very end of this bill. Mr. Chairman, it's just conforming language to include a report on the efficacy of that program. Section 19, and so Section 19, 20, and 21 are all related to teacher certification, I believe. No, I'm on the wrong one. So Section 19 is language that just talks about the board and its standards for reviewing curriculum and ensuring that the standards for review, ranking, and approval of language arts curricula and early education programs for grades K through 3 are based on the five components of evidence-based reading identified by the National Reading Panel. And Mr. Chairman, I might suggest that the committee consider removing the language, the five components of evidence-based reading instruction identified by the National Reading Panel, and instead just inserting those five components.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Section 20 is language that's related to creating carry forward balances, which we're going to get to shortly. And this is under section under AS 1414.115A, subsection A. This extends the cooperative agreements so that districts can enter into agreements not just with other districts but also with private businesses, nonprofit organizations, other government agencies in order to find cost efficiencies and reduce their operating costs. It also makes very clear, just explicit language, because of the constitutional prohibition on using state funds for public education, that cannot occur.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Begich.
Just, I'm going to correct you on the record. It's actually cooperative agreements. That section is not related to the carryover. What that's related to is an existing law that is relatively underfunded that Senator Hughes worked to change. Positively worked to change, what was that, almost 4 years ago now. And it really, some of the districts have entered into these agreements where they have, in fact, we know former Commissioner Hanley is now a superintendent of two different districts, and so they're sharing costs there. There's an incentivized process, and there's actually ideally supposed to be resources attached to that incentivized process, that $100,000, but there's no money in the bank, as it were. But it's a good clause to have in the bill. I appreciate you, and I think this language was in Senator Hughes's 42, wasn't it? Yeah. That this is a good clause to have in there. I just hope that we consider at some point, Mr. Chairman, putting a little bit of resource in that fund so that it doesn't actually incentivize and encourage districts to share their resources. In Prince of Wales Island, a couple of the school districts there shared a finance officer for a number of years as well, with the same idea in mind. And so, you know, it reduces overhead costs and is actually a very efficient way for districts to choose to operate, especially those that are all tightly connected to each other but still have very different populations.
Thank you, Senator Begich.
And, Mr. Chairman, just for the record, if I may clarify, the language or the idea here is that when a district enters a cooperative agreement, it does so to reduce its costs of operations. Mm-hmm. Those reductions in operations can lead to a carry-forward balance. And if the district is unable to use those carry-forward funds, they would be deducted from a future year's appropriation for their basic need, their state aid. Mm-hmm. And so the provision here, what we're talking about, is potentially generating an increased carry forward, and so a provision, the reason why I mentioned that it's tied to the carry forward is because the provision later ensures that if the districts are able to generate those additional reductions in costs, they're allowed to continue to use those reductions actually accrue to the district and not just to the state.
Thank you. With no other questions, Section 21.
Mr. Chairman, Section 21 amends AS 1417.500. This is a new subsection D, which is the language that allows districts to include their student population for early education programs in the foundation formula, and they are counted at one half of an equivalent full-time student.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. The approval is required under 14, whatever the section, under Section 10 of this bill, so under 1403 410A2, that approval is required in order for a district to include their students in their count. Section 22 is conforming language, or is actual, it's actual language that reverts the exclusion of early education students if the sunset provisions in this bill were to actually take effect.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Baggage.
Section 22 actually does take effect. And so if the bill isn't ever adjusted, it will take effect. And I want, again, just for the record, why would we then be, what is the logic behind the termination of the program at that point? Would you just, for the record, I want to make sure every school district understands what this section means.
Senator Baggage, to the Chair, thank you. This Section 22 is, in fact, a sunset provision, so let me correct the record there. And it does sunset the ADM inclusion in 2032 if it does, in fact, take effect. If it's not, if this section is not adjusted before it takes effect, then this will take effect. And again, Mr. Chairman, just because this is a new program and a change to the foundation formula, it's prudent and financially responsible to ensure the efficacy of the program before the funding continues. And so this, as we were talking about earlier, at once the report to the legislature and the consideration of a future legislature determines whether this funding should or should not continue, if it elects not to act, it would in fact be repealed.
I am noting the date and time that that answers, so when the question comes up for the next 5 or 10 times, we can refer back to that moment.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the reason I'm bringing that up is because, you know, I've been given two reasons for why we don't, why we have this. I've been asked the question, or the question's been asked, what am I afraid of to have a repealer in here? And I'm actually not afraid of anything. What I'm concerned with is why we would apply a repealer to what's being called a new program when, in fact, we're rolling in only high-quality pre-K based on what's existed for 10 years in the state of Alaska, where we have ample evidence that's been presented to this committee. You know, been presented here, why we somehow believe that that's experimental, and so it requires this, when we have evidence on the record that shows in common cohorts, those who've gone through that level of pre-K versus those who did not in the same school district with the same backgrounds have higher achieving at third grade and now eighth grade. So that's why I'm bringing it up, because it seems to, I'm still questioning where it becomes a new program when it's in fact applying a standard we've been testing for over a decade. That's what I'm talking about. So the reason I'm making it clear is when you go through this bill, it's very difficult for a school district, and I've been contacted by a few saying, wait, what is happening here? For them to understand that. So that's why I'm bringing it up. Now after this, I'm probably only gonna bring it up one other time. So there's a blessing to all this that I think you could appreciate, but I think I only have one more time that it comes up. So, but thank you for your indulgence, actually. Thank you very much for that.
And I'll just say, so this is the plan. This is the plan. Mm-hmm. The execution in the field is going to determine the success of the plan. Mm-hmm. The sunset date gives us a check on the execution in the field. And for that reason, there's a sunset date included. And I do look forward to watching whichever legislature is in session in 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years addressing this and making it permanent or doing a tweak, a small correction towards the future.
Appreciate that.
Senator Hughes. Kind of thinking out loud here, but what if we were, I'm just wondering if this might be helpful for Senator Baggage's concern, what if we put something in the bill that would require not just the annual report, but at a certain point as we approach that sunset date, that the department prepare an analysis and recommendation on whether the pre-K program should continue or not, present that to the legislature. Before the Senate, before the education committees or something. So, I mean, I'm sure people will be watching this, but I don't know if that would provide any assurance that there would be a review, because that's the way I see it. I think that is going to happen naturally. but it might provide some more comfort and insurance to you that that would be the process if we were actually to put some sort of language in the bill. I'm just curious what the chair might think about that and what Senator Begich might think about that.
And I think that gets back into the discussion of the report, the final report at the time, and the success of the program or not.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Senator Begich.
One of the provisions in the bill, as written, is that there is you have a body that actually annually reviews all the elements of this bill. So that would be a natural place to put such a suggestion. But that actually exists in the bill. You have a review process, just like we do in our education system now. We review annually and try to come up with good ideas and ways to deal with those things. So it seems like a reasonable request for all the elements of the bill.
Senator Machicki?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Begich and I have talked about this. I just look at this very differently. I think so for the public, you guys all know this sitting here. It takes 11 Senate votes, 21 House votes, and a governor has to sign something for it to become law. And I think there's a group of people, a subset of our body, that would be really hesitant to support this bill, knowing that it goes forward in perpetuity, versus a much larger subset that would be willing to support it if they knew that it was going to be up for review and possibly not being sunsetted. I think it's a positive thing, and I know that Senator Begich doesn't see it that way, and I respect his opinion absolutely. I'm actually not challenging his assumptions. I just think when you think about getting that collection of votes it takes to pass something, it sets the education deed and educators free to prove that in every district where this occurs that's not occurring today, that by golly, that the results are significant, which drives us to, even some of us that might hesitantly support this right now, we may become believers that whether we're here or not, advocate for the continuation of this program. I mean, I think that's, I'm viewing it very positively as opposed to folks not believing in the program. I think it's a way to double down and support for the program as it goes forward and delivers those results. When we're not 50 anymore and we become number 26 or 28 or something and we really see us moving the needle, I think it could be a really positive thing. So I
was about to say I'm not 50 anymore, but then I realized you weren't talking about age. So,
I just do. I view it that way, and we may continue to disagree on that, but I think it can be something that really brings a whole lot of dedicated supporters to pre-K education in this state that will hesitantly support it today and wholeheartedly support it in the future.
Let's roll on.
Okay.
I'll just say, as a new senator here, one caution I have constantly heard is beware the foundation funding formula because of unintended consequences. And you poke it here and something else happens way down there. And I think any time we protect ourselves from our own mistakes is a good thing. Mr. King.
Mr. Chairman, moving on to Section 23. Section 23 is an amendment to the existing language that allows districts to increase their carry forward expenditure operating balance. Under current law, it's 10% of their operating funds. This proposal would increase that to 50%. Mr. Chairman, this goes away in 2026. However, the reason for this language was intended to allow districts to deal with the federal influx of the influx of federal funds related to the CARES Act and other underfunding mechanisms. I understand that there might be another vehicle which is already addressing this issue, and so, Mr. Chairman, this section of the bill might not be necessary.
Thank you.
Section 24, Mr. Chairman, is a future effective date. So, the idea allowing a time frame for the districts to get through with the federal funding influx, and then taking effect after that, increasing the funding operating carry forward from 10% to 25%, making that a permanent change, unconditional, so that they have more breathing room in their annual budgets. Section 25 is additional language that provides an another 25% conditional carry forward, and that actually, I'm jumping to 26, Mr. Chairman. 25 is just conforming language to 26, so let me move to 26. 26 provides for an additional 25% carry forward on the condition that funding in that lapsing fund or those carry forward funds were not generated by reductions to instruction. And then the condition is simply that you have to get an approval and an approved plan for the use of that additional funding. And if the district is meeting some standard for reading improvement, then the use of those funds is unconditioned. However, if the district is underperforming, then those additional funds would need to be used for reading improvement. And Mr. Chairman, I would point out that the provision here is that the, I believe it's tied to the
NAEP scores.
NAEP scores, which I understand might not be readily available to districts, and a different cut score approach is going to be needed, and the department is working on language for that.
Senator Baggage.
Two quick points, Mr. Chairman. The first, yes, NAEP scores aren't at the district level, so that would be lines 30, 31 would have to be changed, and I think that the department is working on that. Number two, just a consideration here. You know, I understand the logic behind this is to try to create a incentive for success, and I would just caution you, I think it's worth talking to, and I would guide you to the school district associations and to school districts themselves, to ask how in practicality those kinds of things work out. If you're already at the bottom of the list, you may not meet a standard but improve your reading. So how you write or describe or discuss that will make a difference. So I would really urge staff to reach out to those folks and be sure that the language, you know, I'm certain those groups could come up with better language. I certainly can't, but I'm certain the groups could.
Thank you, Senator Baggage. Section 27.
Mr. Chairman, Section 27 of the bill, let me get to my notes here, is, yes, this is related to calculating school size factors, and so this is just an inclusion to make it clear in communities with ADMs between 101 and 425 where you have to separate your ADMs into elementary and high school or secondary schools, that the early education students are included in the elementary school. Section 28 of the bill. Notes again. This is a reverting section that would take effect in 2032 should that repeal actually take effect. And again, it's just reversing the language in the previous section. Section 29, Mr. Chairman, is a new subsection D, which says that an ADM, a school district cannot include their early education students in the ADM count if those students are receiving federal funding or other state funding. Specifically, this is for, I believe, Head Start funding and any other state funding that might exist. Section 30, Mr. Chairman, so sections 30, 31, and 32 are related to teacher certification. And Mr. Chairman, Section 30 is related to preliminary teaching certificates, requiring that a teacher that is issued a preliminary teaching certificate and is teaching grades kindergarten through third grade complete the coursework training and testing requirements in evidence-based reading instruction approved by the Board of Education.
I just had a quick question here.
Senator Baggage.
In this particular section, it's drawn nearly word for word. There's some good changes in language from a section from the Senate Bill 8 that may have also been in 42. I don't know. But there was a last phrase in this subsection, evidence-based reading instruction means reading instruction informed by research that supports improved educational outcomes. I just was wondering why you didn't include that language. It's omitted in two different sections of the bill.
Senator Baggage, through the chair, that sounded, I'd have to go back and look, but that sounded like it was a definitional issue, and since the definition is provided elsewhere in the statute, that definition might not be necessary within the subsection, but I would need to confirm that.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator
Hughes?
Yes, thank you, and I just want the committee, Mr. Chair, maybe think about, as we pointed out before, I think it was the Excellence in Education, I believe her name was Dr. Burke, was it?
Dr. Burke.
Yeah, it's talking about Mississippi requires an assessment, and we're requiring a course, and as we know, you can get a D minus and pass a course. So whether we should require a certain grade for the course for reading instruction or have an assessment test, just to make sure we're doing the best we can for students in that regard. So I don't have a specific idea at this point, but I hope the committee thinks about that, because we did hear from Dr. Burke there was a bit of a tug of war, and until they put that assessment requirement, the universities in their state didn't really get on the ball and get on the stick to be teaching it the way it needed to be taught at the college level, university level. So just if we could all be thinking about that, I think it would be good.
Thank you, Senator Hughes.
With
no other questions, Section 31.
Mr. Chairman, if I could address that comment before we move on.
Please do.
Mr. Chairman, I'd point out two changes in this section of the bill, Section 30, relative to previous iterations of the bill. One of those changes is that the reference to 3 credit hours doesn't exist in this bill. It just simply requires that the Board of Education develop standards for the coursework training and testing requirements. And this is intentional. It's non-prescriptive language to allow the board to determine what those requirements should be and to implement a time frame that's reasonable and attainable. If you were, Mr. Chairman, to put language in here that was more prescriptive, such as requiring a course, and that course doesn't exist, it could create a major conflict in actually executing this statute. And so, Mr. Chairman, I would expect that what the process would be that the board first adopts regulations, and then the legislature would review those regulations and determine whether they meet their standards, and then, if not, could be more prescriptive in the future.
Okay, that makes sense. Thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Section 31 is a relatively long section that basically just says that the Board of Education needs to review its standards to establish the standards for issuing teacher certificates. And Mr. Chairman, I would defer to Senator Hughes if there's questions on this section.
Seeing none.
All right. Mr. Chairman, Section 32 is a like change to regular teaching certificates as to the preliminary teaching certificates in Section 30 of the bill. I would also point out that the language is slightly different in Section 32 than in Section 30, and that the committee might consider aligning the language that is used in each section. Mr. Chairman, Section 33 is a lengthy section that adds the reading intervention services to the existing statute. It's probably what you might consider the heart of the bill, or at least one of the hearts of the bill. It is...
Well, it would be the beating heart of the bill.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Begich. So I'll walk through very briefly the sections in this, the subsections in this section of 760. So that's AS 1430-760 is a new section of law. Section A is the implementation of the services, and it's just directing the department to carry out the rest of the bill. It directs the department to establish a statewide screening tool to identify students with reading deficiencies. And it establishes also the timeline for which those assessments should happen, which specifically is 3 times a year in the winter, the fall, winter, and spring. Subsection A. Subsection B directs the school district to provide the individual reading plans for students that exhibit a reading deficiency. Subsection C requires that the districts notify the parents that the child has demonstrated a reading deficiency. So it's just parental information, correspondence.
Hold on just 1 second. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Begich.
I'm seeing a section B.
Yeah, you are correct.
On page 24, but I'm not seeing a section C there. And I did have a quick question about section B, based on earlier conversations.
Mr. Chairman, let me please correct the record. So 760 is the two subsections A and B, which are both related to the establishment of a reading assessment screening tool, and directs the department in determining what those screening assessments would look like. I jumped to 1430.765 without stating that fact, and I apologize for that.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Just please, Senator Begich.
Thank you. In the prior versions of these bills, there was a section where the screening is culturally responsive to the needs of particular communities based on our earlier conversation about that kind of language. It's just there was a section 5 in that bill, and I would encourage you to consider, again, that was based on the Alaska Standards for Cultural Responsive Schools that was part of our department's publications, and I would urge you to consider adding that language back in there. Thank you, Mr.
Duly noted. Mr. King?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I went over 1430.765 A, B, and C. I believe I was going to D, which we're jumping all the way to.
Well,
go ahead.
If I may, on page 18, just a quick question.
Repeat again?
On page 24, line 18. Just a
page
quick 24, question.
Line 18.
Yeah, just.
Senator Begich.
Senator Hughes has on a number of occasions you've indicated you prefer the word progression as opposed to retention, and I just.
Promotion.
So I just thought that you might want to take note of that as well.
Thank you, Senator Begich. With no other questions, Mr. King.
Mr. Chairman, so I'm on page 27 of the bill under subsection D. This is 1430.765, subsection D. This is related to a procedure to communicate with the parents about the potential need to delay promotion. Mr. Sherman, subsection E, it sets out the factors to determine whether a child is ready to be promoted to the fourth grade. This is language specific to third graders.
Could I ask a question there?
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That language is slightly different than from what SBA was, and I'm just curious why not proficient, but progress too. What was the logic in making that word change?
Senator Begich, through the chair, I believe, as you pointed out earlier, there was between Senate Bill 8 and Senate Bill 42, there was a difference in the language, the frame of the language that was being discussed, whether it was a promotion or a retention. And so I believe that what you're seeing is, in some situations, the frame references one and not the other. And I would recommend that the committee consider aligning that language throughout the bill.
Mr. Chairman, where I'm pointing that is just it says at grade level as opposed to proficient, and I just didn't. You know, you've given a reason. I'm not sure it makes a material difference one way or the other.
Mr.
So I just wanted to get the reasoning.
Mr. King.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to address that. As the point of making that change was actually related to the NAEP scores. The NAEP scores relate to the word proficiency, and that proficiency standard is relatively high. And so if someone were to read the bill and read the word proficient as an interpretation of proficient on the NAEP score, the retention rate, a potential retention rate or delayed promotion rate would be 75%, because only 25% of Alaskan children in fourth grade are currently reading at proficient according to the NAEP standard. And so I just wanted to make sure that in drafting that we were clear that we were not referencing the NAEP score, we were referencing something that the department would determine as a basis for promotion.
Thank you. Senator Michicki.
This is potentially a very important part of this bill. You're potentially adding 8% of the cost of educating a student for each person that is retained through the, you know, K-12 cycle, if you will. What do we do in the bill to kind of deal with the prevention of not being able to be promoted earlier on? I mean, you're talking about 25% are proficient at this point. This could become an overused tool and really could have a significant impact. And I'm going to talk about the cost. My focus is always on the child. But if we're not getting ahead of it early enough and we're starting to sort of highlight this issue, big fiscal note, not included in this bill, but if you really analyze it, it's potentially 8% of 1.2 million if you actually went the full spectrum. Of course, you wouldn't. There's parental overrides and things like that. It's just something we need to think about in the back of our minds. So that's, I want a better result. Prevention's more of a key than getting to that point and having that proportion of kids that are held back.
Senator Hughes?
I want to respond to that. The carrot's always better than the stick, of course. And Florida got to the point where they implemented it right away, and they saw a rise in the children who were not ready to be promoted. And then it rebalanced where they kind of came back to where they were. And so they didn't see an increase. And what we're doing here is delaying it so that you have a robust functioning program, that a child will have the opportunity to have all the intervention and prevention K, 1, 2, and 3rd grades. So you're not implementing it right away. So that child has the full advantage of all the intervention and prevention pieces. And then we're also allowing the parental override, of course, with a parent understanding that it might be tough for that child as that child moves up, but also then giving more opportunities for intervention in the month. I think this would fall in April that they'd have this meeting, right? And so that they would also be given opportunities to get a certain number of hours of continued intervention and before they would move into that grade. If the parent decided, no, I want my child to go ahead and move, the child would still be required to go through additional intervention, and maybe that child would then be fully ready. This also, I believe, Mr. King, allows, the goal is also that the child would all be caught up with her cohort and be allowed to travel with her cohort in other areas where the reading might not be causing the struggle. For instance, if they're doing fine in math, they could continue. But the idea is to try to keep them on track and get them back with their cohort. And I don't think you would see, if we do this properly and we do the delay, I don't think you will see an uptick in children not being promoted. We shouldn't.
Mr. Chairman, just for clarity, I believe that Senator Hughes is referencing the delayed effect on a provision that happens two or three sections later, where some of the should provisions turn into must provisions. I believe that was the reference.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, on Senator Michicki's point, I would also say that it is potentially possible that students need to be retained if they're not ready for promotion, and it's clearly it's up to the members of the legislature to decide whether it's a better policy to spend the extra money, make sure a child is ready for the next grade and ready for life after school, or to push them through more quickly, even if they aren't quite ready. So that's. There would be an associated cost. I would also point out that additional cost would not happen until the first cohort of third graders that are retained are supposed to be graduating. So we're a 9-year delay before there's actually any fiscal impact, because if a child that would be going to fourth grade is just going to third grade instead, repeating the grade, there's no additional kids in the system until those third graders would have been graduating. So it's a delayed impact fiscally. And as Senator Hughes pointed out, there is an opportunity for children to be promoted if they do catch up, which is hopefully the outcome of this whole process. And then, Mr. Chairman, I would also point out that we are talking about preparing children from the age of 4 now with this bill, with additional reading intervention services and early assessments if the child's falling behind, so that by the time that child does get to third grade, that reading deficiency should no longer exist because of all of the intervention services that have been provided. So the actual retention, hopefully, if this is effective, would be very small.
Thank you, Mr. King. Senator Begich.
Well, we're on a sort of a general discussion of this promotion standard. So the first question I'd have is, do we have anything like this in the state of Alaska now that's going on?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know the answer to that question.
I would say I've had informal discussions with teachers, and we discuss this program, and a lot of the more successful grade school programs I've spoken to, they say we're already doing that.
So right now,
but not all of them.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Senator Begich.
Now, in this state, we do allow retention policies to be established at the local level. They're different, but we don't have evidence of this program. in this approach, which is the approach that myself and Senator Hughes are generally in agreement on, generally this kind of an approach, not the later approach that kicks in at a later point. That's in, I think, sections 36 or 37 or something like that. But if we're going to apply, and I assume we are, that this bill is going to pass out, if we're going to apply a standard of repeal of something that's been categorized as new, this actually is significantly more new than early education is in the state of Alaska. Likewise, the must language that we're going to be talking about later is even more experimental. So these are the kinds of things, if we're going to apply a standard of sunset, that should also be subject to that standard. Earlier we talked about the age of students. This has never been done here in this state, and the examples provided in committee in changing the date, the age, for when a person comes to school is something we used foreign countries, all of which have strong early education programming, but we didn't apply a standard there, and we brought it up, we discussed it. If we're going to end up with a bill that does have sunset standards, then it should apply to each of these experimental elements within this bill. Virtual education, for example, also is something we have only done in limited ways in this state, as limited as, some might argue, the early education experience. That, too, should be subject to a sunset clause so that we can be sure it is actually doing what it intends to do. This, to me, is the contradiction in the bill that has so frustrated me. Either it is one thing or it is another. If it's not consistent across the board, either no repealers at all or repealers across the board, which you suggested the other day you were open to, if it's either one or the other, it's consistent. If it's not, it's not consistent, and it sends to me a message that these things are more important than these things. And I want to see if that's the case, what the evidence is to ensure that those things are, in fact, more important because of the experience on the ground right here in Alaska that they've worked, because that's been brought up to me before.
Humor me a question, Senator Begich.
Please.
So we have 10 years of proof that pre-K is working in Alaska.
In the districts where it's applied with the standards that are laid out in this bill.
I'll need to get you to show it to me, because I struggle to understand why we're still 50 of 50 for fourth grade education, fourth grade reading in Alaska.
Because
I mean, it's we're looking for the solution for the future.
That's correct. And you said humor you. So to humor you, Mr. Chairman, because we don't apply universal voluntary pre-K in the state of Alaska. In fact, when we have the department doing that, we have a small number of grants that go out, and where they have consistently applied these standards, we've had success, which is precisely why we created the concept of the grants program and the concept of opening this up to the base student allocation. You've asked exactly the right question. Where we've applied it, we've actually seen those districts have tremendous growth. Superintendent Burgess talked to you about Nome and its capacity here with her school district. The LKSD superintendent did the same. Superintendent Bishop discussed that as well, and she had the experience of both the Mat-Su and the Anchorage examples to talk about. Not every district does apply it. That's exactly the issue here. I'm all for doing this in a way that says, this is our policy. Let's review our policy. This was that other time I said I was going to bring this up, so I'm bringing it up now. But I want us to do something meaningful and consistent, not for you, not for me, not for the president, not for the senator, but for the people who are saying, why are we 50th and why can't we improve it? We analyzed that very question and said, early education, like in Florida, where it's universal, coupled with a good, strong reading program, like Mississippi and Florida both have, or Colorado, can lead to outcomes that work here in Alaska. And how do we know that? Because where districts are practicing that, it works. That's the intent. And if this bill does that, this bill will be the exact bill that I heard Senator Machicki talking about, that I heard you talking about, that I heard Senator Hughes talking about, and Senator Stevens talking about, and I'll be behind that bill. That's what I want to see, a consistency in the policy. That's all I'm asking for.
Well, that's where we'll have to differ, because I believe in its current form, with some tweaks that we'll have in committee substitute and amendments, I believe this can be. I wouldn't be pursuing this if I didn't think. When I came to this committee, my whole thought was everybody's been looking at education for years before I got here, and I would just review the information that was in front of us. I was not interested in reinventing the wheel on a lot of this. But so appreciate your comments. Senator McChicken.
Just back to my original comments, which officially opened a can of worms. And significantly more newer, I'm going to have to borrow that term, Senator Begich. my question actually was made quite a bit more. I mean, I have a fourth grader that required some reading intervention early on, and she's actually accelerated beyond her grade at this point. She got really hung up on early reading, and so that does make me more comfortable. Where my concern lies, I see the 20 hours of summer intervention when the parent decides they're going to promote their child anyway. This section just seems to be, when you get to that funnel and you're at that point, I was reminded by the early intervention in some districts, but I certainly hope they put it into practice, because you get to this point, the end of third grade, and that child is not prepared in a summer. I mean, 20 hours after 3 years of education is not going to get you there, right? Hopefully that's happening much earlier in the process, and we don't end up with a pile of third graders that aren't going to fourth. That was where my concern lied. Mm-hmm. This section sort of seems to point that way, but I'll spend more time on the other earlier, you know, K through 2 or K through 3 intervention that could occur to avoid that bottleneck.
Mm-hmm. And I believe the response was that there's a certain number of children in the pipeline, and any increase in expense would not be seen until the build-up had.
I heard that, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Yep. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. King.
Yes, thank you. For the record, Ed King again. I would point out that, Mr. Chairman, that the intervention services that are provided in this section apply to any child that has a reading deficiency, whether that is identified in kindergarten or first grade or second grade or third grade. And the reading improvement plan and those interventions follow that child until they get caught up. It doesn't just apply to third grade and whether or not that third grader should promote to fourth grade, although that is the defining moment on whether. You know, the language in the bill is very specific that is the point at which you need to determine whether that child is going to advance or not. The process for that, Mr. Chairman, is defined in subsections D, E, and F. The subsection D requires that a parent-teacher conference, if you will, is required so that the parents and the teachers and the other other faculty that are involved in the student's education come together and determine what that child needs and whether that child should promote to the next grade. Subsection E sets the standards for determining whether that child should promote or not. But the subsection F is where the rubber really hits the road, and that is that in that parent-teacher conference, and I'm using that word kind of loosely, the parent has the ultimate say on whether that child promotes or not. So the district cannot retain a child without the parent's approval. The parent just simply has to sign a waiver that says, I acknowledge that my child is not ready for the next grade, and I agree to adding 20 more hours of reading intervention services during the summertime, which maybe is a summer reading camp, or if a district is unable to provide a summer reading camp, can be any other interventions that are listed earlier in the bill. The graduation or the promotion to fourth grade is not conditioned on completing those 20 hours or completing the reading improvement program plan whatsoever. It's the process by which we can determine that the child needs additional help. And if the child is promoted, Mr. Chairman, the next section, if the child is promoted to, and might not be that exact next section, but later in the bill, if the child is promoted and is not ready, so under a waiver by the parent or by a good cause waiver, those reading intervention services continue in the fourth grade for that student. So we don't just give up on those kids that are promoted.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hughes.
So, and I also just want to point out, because of the delay and having a really strong promotion policy is out a number of years. It also coincides and dovetails with the three-month delay in start age, that three extra months of maturity. So I think we are not going to see, I'm really confident that we're not going to see a problem. And one of the things that the evidence has shown in the states that were willing, and they did it too early, so they did see an initial uptick until it smoothed out, but these states have seen much more rapid rates of success as far as climbing scores overall when they have a strong promotion policy, because there's not a teacher, a school principal, or a superintendent who wants to have their increased number of children repeat grades. So they work very hard. And so I know it's scary, and perhaps it's experimental. I'd be okay putting even a sunset date on if we saw it wasn't working. I would be okay with that, because I'm confident that it would, based on the evidence coming out of the states who have had strong promotion policies versus the states that were afraid to, you know, just didn't want to go there. Just they did the intervention piece, but they didn't want to touch the strong promotion policy. They did not see the improvement, the states that were willing to go there. So I'd be fine sunsetting it, because I really believe that teachers, principals, and superintendents are going to be super motivated for success.
Senator Begich was next. Senator Begich?
Oh, do you want to respond to that first?
It's on the same subject, and I read the section. I get it on the earlier intervention. My what if, so when we get to the end of third grade and there's still a problem, we have this process with parents. But I will tell you, with my, which completely anecdotal, with my sweet girl, but I will tell you, if it wasn't for the commitment by her parents, happened to be my wife and I don't know that earlier on that intervention would have been as effective. We put a lot of work into it. She excelled. Everything's fine. Do we have a parental piece earlier on in the process? Because I think that's key to success. Not every parent can do it. Kids come from very different family structures. But for the ones that can, what do we have earlier on? I didn't actually catch that in the earlier intervention that involved.
I believe Mr. King is looking for the chapter and verse.
Mr. Chairman, I refer you and the members to back to subsection H is also there. But let me, before we get there, let me, the enumerated list of reading intervention services that occur on page 24 and 25. One through eight. This list, it describes what the district needs to do to help those children, those students, grades kindergarten through three that have been identified with a deficiency, and it explicitly lays out the methods. One of those being that the paragraph eight be implemented outside of regular school hours, and then. I'm missing it now, but I believe that there was a
line 25.
Line 25.
On page 25, you'll see.
Right. So the reading improvement plan includes the parents, I think, is what Senator Begich is pointing out.
Correct. If I could comment on that, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Begich.
Senator Michiki, all through the way that the, and this is where the two bills, 42 and 8, were generally in agreement. All the way through this, parental engagement was recognized as essential. And so the parent is notified, they're provided at least 10 contacts. There's services, if you look under, again, on page 25, subsection B starts at 18. It gives a number of different pieces that require active consultation with the parents or guardians. We even apply in this bill something that was in SB 8, which is a broader description of what we mean by parents and guardians that is consistent with other statute, so that it includes extended family. Your concern is a valid concern, which is, are the parents going to be engaged with this process? They can't always be, but as much as we can, we try to do it in all of our bills.
Okay, I'm just.
Senator Hughes.
This gets dangerous when you start thinking out loud, but I'm thinking out loud again. Just wondering, the Parents as Teachers program is for parents of 4 and 5 year olds. What if we extended that through third grade? Would that be a possible way to, even though we're involving the parents in the consultation, but would there be benefit to expanding the Parents as Teachers through third grade parents?
If I could respond to that, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Baggage.
It's Parents as Teachers is an evidence-based model that is focused on a certain age group. And so I would rather suggest, rather than mentioning the Parents as Teachers model there, which is an early education model, that you'd want to look at what might exist elsewhere where parents are engaged. There are certain model programs out there, and probably you'd want to have some kind of a allowance to the department to identify that, because these programs, you know, Parents as Teachers has got a long history. It's been around for a long time, but it's focused on a very narrow age group. So you don't want to necessarily assume that those methods work at that older age. But there are parental engagement entities, and I'm certain you can find exactly what you're looking for within that regard, and so could the department. I'm certain of it.
I'll just state, I believe we've completed Section F, and we're going to go ahead and suspend it before G, because we still have H through O in that section. Senator Machicki.
Yeah, before we close out, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate it. I've read through the reintervention program. I see lots of processes that occur, but I only see essentially notification to the parents. I don't see an active parental role, unless I missed something. And I read through this earlier, and it just concerned me.
Well, the reading intervention program occurs every year, and the children are tested 3 times a year. So I believe that the opportunity to draw the parents in is increased more than just the one time you may see it on the document. Mr. King?
Mr. Chairman, I just point to page 26 of the bill, lines 21 and 22.
Just another
it's a
opportunity.
Yeah.
I believe Senator Hughes had something.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I look forward for an amendment from Senator Machicki that will strengthen the parental role, because if we can't use Parents as Teachers program, maybe there is something else, because we all know it's very key and important. So.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Baggage.
When I had, and I'll save my questions for the next meeting, but when I had raised my hand earlier, I was responding just then to Senator Hughes' thing, but I had two questions on they're just clarifying questions on, and so I'll save those, though, if you want, and on that section.
That'll be fine. We're already past the...
Do you want me to just share real quick then?
And a simple question can
well, I think
lead to a 15-minute.
I just ask you to take a look at, Ed, under 23.7A, the receives a waiver under F. That waiver, of course, under F is only available to third graders. It's not available to younger ages. So I think I want to be sure that was your intent. And then the second one was on line 19. We had, because of literacy issues, we had had explained that district or school informed the parents or guardians of the student's progress, not in writing, because that actually came up because there's significant literacy issues with parents. Some of them can't read. So that was why we had eliminated it in writing, because we wanted to provide the flexibility. It came from St. Mary's School District. So I just wanted to point that
and
out.
And Senator Baggage got us 2 points in anyway.
Oh, well, they were in the same section.
That's okay. That's fine. I appreciate everyone's patience. This is a large bill. Alaska has many challenges on education fronts. We're going to suspend our review of this, the sectional analysis at this point, pick it up again on Wednesday. Is there any other business before the committee? Seeing none, our next meeting is Wednesday, March 31st at 9 a.m., and we are adjourned at 10:34.